go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast. You know me. My name is Ben, finger quote, Easy Rider Bolin, and I'm hanging out here today with...
Scott Rat Rod Benjamin. Well, I guess that's okay, isn't it?
Rat I thought Rat Rod was awesome.
I don't know. It's a little awkward, but...
I think Easy Rider is kind of weird.
Yeah,
I don't know
I was taken by surprise. I didn't really have anything in front of me or anything like that, but...
Rat Rod.
Yeah, maybe.
I like that. You can say it really quickly.
Rat Rodder?
Rat Rodder.
Yeah, something like that. That sounds good. Anyways.
Okay. So, Scotty B, here we are again. You know, man, we've had a lot of people writing to us and saying, Scott, Ben, do a motorcycle podcast. And we did one.
We did a few, didn't we?
We did a few.
We did a few. We had a trail that went all the way across the U.S., mostly across
That's
the U.S.
That's right, yep.
We had sidecar racing.
We did. Yeah. We've done a few.
Just a general motorcycle over. We've had a few.
But these guys really like motorcycles.
Yeah,
Scott.
And you know what? I've got something for them this time. I was recently out west, and I was looking at a bulletin board on, unbelievably enough, Historic Route 66. And I found a little ad that was posted there, and it said Motorcycle Cannonball. And Motorcycle Cannonball has its own website. It's, you know, of course, www.motorcyclecannonball.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it down, just the address, and I stuffed it in my wallet, and I went on about my trip, and then I came home and I looked it up. And this is really something cool. We need to talk about this.
You know what? We should talk about it right now.
Well, that's good, because we have everything is recording, so we're doing all right then. We've got this Motorcycle Cannonball race that's happening. It's happening at the end of this year. It's happening in September.
Right.
Oh, you know the date?
Is it 16th through 18th?
No, wait.
I've got my date wrong.
September 10th through the 26th.
That's right.
Okay. And it's 17 days. Maybe that's... Well, no, I don't know how you got the 16th.
Yeah, I've got... No, no, don't worry.
That's okay.
It's about when they'll be in Hot Springs.
Oh, okay.
Specifically.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right. Yeah, so September 10th through the 26th of this year, 2010, is when this thing's supposed to happen. So it's a 17-day event. And this race covers 3,325 miles. It goes coast to coast from east to west. And you may be thinking to yourself, well, that's not a big deal. You can ride
just a bunch of motorcycles.
You can ride coast to coast on a motorcycle, right?
Sure.
Here's the catch. Pre-1916 motorcycles.
Ah. Did you say 1960?
No.
Did you say 1916?
I did.
Pre-World War II?
Pre-World War I.
Well, yeah, but also...
Yeah. You know what? You're correct. You're correct.
Right.
Pre-World War II also.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, it's very interesting because the average person does not see bikes of that vintage.
No, these are museum pieces.
Yeah, you just don't see them on the road.
I mean, there are some around that, you know, the collectors have, and they keep them in the garage, and they take them out for weekend rides, and, you know, they're... Maybe 20 miles, 50 miles, 10 miles, but this is a 3,325 mile race across the U.S. It's literally from coast to coast, and these guys are going to do it in 17 days on vintage motorcycles that you would normally find in a museum.
Wow, and they're going to be, I mean, to accomplish that mileage in that amount of time, they're going to be riding these pretty hard. They're not going to be just... coasting.
Yeah, according to the web page that, you know, you can find as well. You can look a lot of photos while you're there too, and some of the older bikes and some of the entrants. Most of the days are going to be about 250 miles of travel or less. I think there are a couple days that go over that.
Okay.
I believe just to kind of round things out, and the speeds are only going to be around an average of about 35 miles per hour. So it's going to be a long trip for these guys across. I mean, again, when you look at them, they look like bicycles, right? They look like look like a bicycle with an engine, basically. And they've got big, wide seats, and you know, it's exactly what you think of when you think of the old Indian motorcycles. It really does look like a bicycle versus a motorcycle.
But see, that's the thing that I think we're forgetting here: 35 miles per hour before 1916. Was really, really fast.
That was moving along pretty good. They were pretty advanced machines at the time. And there's still, I mean, there's this group of guys that, you know, group of men and women that that collect and restore and, you know, just appreciate these motorcycles. And I love looking at them. I mean, I think they're really cool.
Yeah.
They're really neat.
Now, they're leaving Kitty Hawk, right?
Yeah, they leave Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, and they don't finish until they get to Santa Monica, California. So 17 days from Kitty Hawk to Santa Monica, where they wrap things up.
And when we're talking about these motorcycles, specifically brands we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
We would be talking about stuff like Pope. Let's see. Check me on this. You're the expert here if I'm wrong. So, you, as you mentioned before, Indian, but also Harley-Davidson.
Harley-Davidson, that's right. Yeah, there's Harley-Davidsons in there because they were built. There was a kind of a sweet spot, I guess, where Harley-Davidsons were built before. Because remember, you can't have anything that was built after 1915. It's all pre-1916 machines. So some of the Harley-Davidsons, I'm looking at the entrant list right now.
Nice.
And I'm just going to run down quickly. I'm looking. There's 1915 Harley-Davidsons, Indians, Pope. There's also Excelsior. Some of those, you know, that you just haven't heard of.
Yeah.
Maybe ever. Eagle, the Sears, Triumph, BSA. There's just a bunch of them. Yale made a bike.
There's just Flying Merkel.
Yeah.
Merkel.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Merkel.
Henderson. There's a just odd bikes, really. A lot of Indians. But as of today, there were 99 entrants into this race. So it's gaining momentum. This thing is getting big. And I can only imagine what, you know, this must look like on the road. That's pretty cool to see that. I'd love to watch them go by.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's one thing that I think is really cool about putting this out here on the interwebs, you know, because now people who have an interest in this can check online and see whether or not they're going to be close to these routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't want to participate.
But you'd like to see the
But you could.
Bikes.
You could go to that website and enter or, you know, find out if your bike's qualified or if you're qualified, et cetera.
Sure.
If you're up to the task, I guess, because that's going to be some test of endurance, I would think.
I imagine,
crossing mountain ranges on bikes that are, you know, single-cylinder, single-speed bikes. And we'll talk about classes in a moment. But
250 miles.
Yeah, if you're somewhere on the route and you can look up the days that, you know, they'll be traveling through your part of the world – try to get near there and see them if you can. I mean, I haven't even really looked at the map very closely, but I would think they'd be kind of close to the Atlanta area in some way.
Yeah, they're trying to avoid interstates, mm-hmm. which means that they're going to be going through a lot of places where you'll actually be able to take some time to look at them. You know,
yeah.
So I'd love to check it out. Mm-hmm. I don't have the map with me right now.
Okay, that's all right. They've got they do have scheduled stops, and again, listeners can, you know, look this up online and follow along with us, I guess, because it's pretty cool that I just think that this is a neat event that they're doing. You don't hear of this very often, something like this, and we've heard of the Great Race, and we've heard of, you know, some of the not imitators, but, you know, like the other types of races like that, you know, the
similar
the Gumball
exposition.
3000, you know, these events that go coast to coast, and but never anything like this with vintage bikes, because you're just completely exposed to the elements in that case. And hopefully the time of year is right for something like this. It's not going to be snowstorms.
Yeah, I hope so.
Hopefully not a rainy season, you know, wherever they pass. But yeah, I think they're in for a good ride.
So what about the class of the bikes?
Classes. There are three classes. The first class is single cylinder, single speed. And they mentioned a couple of problems with each one. If you go to the website, they say it's kind of a lead up, like you know, are they going to make it type thing. But what they said for that one was single cylinder, single speed through the Rockies. They're not sure if it's going to, and I think they go through the Appalachians as well.
Wow.
So
it's
find out if they're going to be able to
rough.
Make it without pushing.
Yeah.
Let's see. The next one is twin cylinder, single speed. That's class number two, twin cylinder, single speed. And the question there was reliability, because at the time, twin cylinder technology was relatively new, especially for motorcycles and, you know, this type of engine. So
it could be kind of buggy.
Again, reliability is key in this thing. And the last class, number three, is multi-cylinder, multi-speed. And they said that this is going to be the most competitive class. And they're going to be the ones really racing for the trophy.
Yeah, I could see that. Wouldn't it be awesome, though, if a single cylinder, single speed
won? It would. And maybe, you know, I guess anything's possible if it comes down to reliability issues, sure. breakdowns, whatever. Things can happen like that. So
all right.
that would be interesting. Not the likely, old, but it could.
The old keep it simple.
Yeah, exactly.
Idea.
Exactly.
But I'm just thinking, man, if one of those bikes won, I would feel like it had earned its place. It earned its retirement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Never drive it again.
Definitely.
Give it a break.
That'd be the one you put on the shelf.
That's the one that goes yeah. on your motorcycle shelf at your right. house, your blank of, motorcycle
Of course,
shelf.
Yeah, that open spot on your motorcycle shelf. You know, we just mentioned the trophy. I think we should talk about that.
We should definitely,
second,
yeah.
Just for a second. And that has some significance in that it's called the Wyman Cup. And the reason that's named the Wyman Cup is because it was named after the first person to ever ride a motorcycle from coast to coast, George Wyman, who did that in 1903. And he did it in 50 days. It took him 50 days to make the trip, but he actually spent 38 days on the road of that 50 days. And you can read some excerpts from his book or his diary. I'm not sure which it was, but there's some excerpts on the site as well. So you can look into that if you want to. I haven't dug, you know, too deeply into that at this point, but I think I will because I find that stuff really interesting.
And also to our listeners, we don't want to give you guys spoilers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, no, those cats are staying in those bags.
Spill the beans.
Oh, gosh. And the beans and the cat
yeah.
all in a bag. all right, so let's say that we've – you know what? This is just a little – speculate with me here, Scott. Mm-hmm. Let's say that we're participants in the motorcycle cannonball. Let's say that we're driving, you know, the – or we're riding one of the more unreliable vehicles, the twin cylinder.
Okay.
And let's say it breaks down. What do we do?
Well, okay, that's the thing. You're allowed to bring spares in a lot of cases on this trip. And I assume that a lot of these guys have chase vehicles that are coming with them. I didn't find anything really about that in here. I haven't really looked at all the rules of the.
Right, it's probably in their guidelines.
I'm sure it's in the details here, but I just haven't gone that far into it as far as an entrant. But I do know that they're allowed spares in many cases. And I looked it up under a lot of the classes. Mm-hmm. The class information tells you where, you know, if you're able to upgrade the brakes, please do, because, you know, that's something that's vitally important. And brakes, you know, in, 1915 weren't all that great. So they said, we encourage you to upgrade the brakes if you can.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the idea is that the core of the bike should be, the vintage bike, the original bike. If you have your original engine, if you have, updates are allowed in a lot of cases, it's kind of up to them. You know, you need to tell them exactly what you've done to the bike,
mm-hmm.
what you have replaced, what you haven't, what's been rebuilt, what's new, what's old, what's, just all the details and let them
sort
know.
Sort of case by case.
Exactly. It's case by case. And they said that, you know, like carburetor, like I'm just reading down the rules right now, carburetors and magnetos, you do have to have the original carbs, but they can be modified or updated. Spares you can bring. You're allowed to bring in a spare carburetor as long as it's an original or a modified one. And they do suggest you rebuild your magneto just in case because your ignition source, they want it to be they want you to have your own the intended ignition source.
Okay.
Tires, again, those are important. They say that there's something called a clincher tire from way back when. It was a different design of tire, the way it grabbed the rim, or the rim grabbed the tire. And this says if you don't feel comfortable running this kind of distance on clincher tires, then please feel free to do something else, you know, whatever safety concerns you may have. They're flexible on that one.
So they're not going to sacrifice safety for style, essentially.
No, but, you know, a lot of places will make, you know, tires that look like that, you know, the rims that look like that aren't necessarily that same design. They have a different method of connecting,
hearing,
yeah, exactly, connecting to each other. I mean, something a little more safe than these clincher tires, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I'll need to dig into these clincher tires. I don't know exactly what that is.
We might have to do something.
Maybe,
on that.
Yeah. And so there's things like lights. It says they're trying to develop a universal battery-powered lighting system that resembles the early carbide lights of the day. So they're trying to come up with a universal system that they can just give to contestants and say, you can use this one. This
mm-hmm.
is road-approved. Plus you'll need a brake switch, you know, so you can have a brake light, but
right.
then you'll be, you know, legal in all states, you know, if you have
put
this.
It on everybody's
exactly.
bike.
Exactly. Okay. If they don't have one, you know, if
yeah.
you don't have lights on your bike to begin with, and some don't apparently. And, of course, you need to be licensed and registered just like anyone else.
What?
And
that's the last straw.
Yeah, that's right. So do drivers, of course. You have to be a licensed driver.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, pretty straightforward rules, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like they're flexible on a lot of things, and, you know, when safety's involved. because they want everybody to be safe. But there's one other kind of interesting thing I've got here, and then I'm just about done, I promise.
Oh, let's check it out. What's going on?
This is kind of interesting. The Cannonball's course master, his name is John Klassen. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Klassen. He's mapped out the whole route, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he says that, this is a quote from him, and John says, our route was chosen in order to avoid having the riders enter a single interstate whenever possible. So they have about 12 hours of light each day, they figure. And they have a goal of having every rider check in at the end of each day, just, you know, to ensure that everybody's made it.
Find that guy.
Exactly, so they're not left out on the road somewhere, right?
Sure.
And so that gets back to what you had mentioned, you know, the breakdowns, what do I do, you know, that type of thing. And it's also a safety thing. They want them to check in 1 hour before sunset because in a lot of cases, it says they don't want to have any safety issues meeting up with local wildlife after dark. So they do expect breakdowns because of the vintage bikes that they're riding.
Sure, and the climate.
Yeah, I mean, when they're talking about wildlife, I mean, they're talking about, in some cases, mountain lions.
Oh, yeah, not mountain squirrels.
No. These are mountain squirrels.
The actual lions.
No, these are mountain lions. You know, out west you get stuff like that. I would assume bears along the way. I mean, there's a lot of dangerous territory that you cover, and, you know, you don't want to be stuck out there at night.
Coyote. Possibly, exactly. Possibly angry motorcycle fury.
Yeah, but here you are with a 95-plus-year-old motorcycle, and you're broken down, and there's a mountain lion after you. What do you do?
I mean, I guess you just learn to accept it.
Fight.
In the time.
Fight, man, fight.
Well, yeah, I would try to fight a mountain lion.
Of course, yeah, I know. There's probably a whole Adventure Channel thing about that.
Oh, yeah, there probably is. Probably. Can I fight a mountain lion?
Probably.
Well, guys, so one more time, the date on the motorcycle run is September, was it 10th?
Through the 26th.
Through the 26th, thank you. And so, to our listeners there, you guys, we hope that we've sort of contagiously transmitted our fascination with the motorcycle cannonball to you.
Yeah, we just kind of want to pique your interest on this event and let you know that it's out there. Maybe take a look at it. And if there are any listeners that are interested in getting into that, this is a good time to do it because it's early enough that you can get in on the race, yep, or you can plan a trip to, you know, watch these things pass by. Whatever your level of involvement you want to be at this point, you know, check it out. It's worth taking a look at. Even if you don't plan to travel there or participate, take a look at this site. It's really cool. There's a lot of great information there and some really cool photographs, vintage and new, of these vintage bikes, and it's really worth looking at.
And please, please don't send us an email in January of next year saying, hey, guys, like the show. I own a 1914 bike, and I was wondering why I can't race it anywhere.
Yeah, I just missed it.
If you do have an email that you'd like to send to us about anything other than that, then maybe send us an email at
highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.